Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
I think the lesson that the rest of us need to learn is, why should we wait until we get to be as desperate as they are in Greece? Why should we put up with more and more misery before we just come to our senses and say, absolutely no, this is not improving our lives. You are destroying the middle class, and there is another way.
That's the voice of economist, educator, and author Dr. Robin Hanel. On this week's show, we speak to Dr. Hanel about the upcoming Greece election, the rejection of austerity, what it means for the European Union, and what it means for us in North America. Stay tuned.
We are very privileged to be joined by Dr. Robin Hanel. He's a prolific author and economist. He is one of those people who make very so-called complicated things seem accessible. And he writes for the people, which is why I love him. And so we've invited him to be on the program to talk to us a little bit about the political crisis that we hear worldwide, but the complexity of our relationships in this world, and what are the possibilities we co-create. Dr. Hanel is the author of many books. His latest book is Participatory Economics, and we're very privileged to have him on the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's good to be on with you, Sylvia.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's such a privilege to have you on the program. Now, when we look at the world today, there's a lot of news about Greece. Now, I remember speaking with you almost 7 years ago now, in 2007, about the economic crisis. And shortly after that, you know, we saw all these riots in Greece. It seemed that the economic crisis that had hit the U.S. had crossed the Atlantic Ocean and had reached the shores of Greece and, you know, in European countries as well. Can you talk a little bit about that catalyst point and what ensued after that? Because it seems to me that the story that we're hearing in the news today is not a complete story. There's a whole backstory that occurred that has led to the current riots, to the current dissent by the population to the austerity program, but also to the kinds of impositions that the IMF and the European Union has made on Greece.
We'll go back over that because it is important for people to understand how it is we've arrived at this situation. But the thing people need to understand right now is that the crisis has reached at least a potential boiling point. And on the 25th of this month, January 25th, there's going to be an election in Greece. And it is likely, this is what the polls say at this point, that a relatively new political party, it's really a coalition, the name Syriza means a coalition of radical left political parties. That coalition, according to the polls, is projected to win the election. Whether they win an outright majority of seats or whether or not they would have to find some sort of coalition governing partners is really what remains to be seen. Of course, it's possible that they might lose the election. There was an election 2 years ago in Greece where Syriza came within an eyelash, within a percentage of the vote, of winning the election. But people are being frightened, and this is being very purposely done by the powers that be. So one never knows exactly what will happen on election day. But it's very possible that Greece will be the first European country to elect a government that says, no more austerity policies. This is insane. It isn't working. It is subjecting an incredible toll on the Greek people. It is pointless. We are not going to put up with it anymore. So this is a serious crisis point. And for anybody in the world who rejects neoliberal austerity policies, it's important that we understand that we should be fully supportive of Syriza. We should be supportive of what they are doing. We should wish them the best. We should do everything we can to protect them from all sorts of reprisals that will be inflicted and threats that will be inflicted upon them if they win the election later this month.
You know, I'm so glad that you point that out, because while understanding the story that has created all this massive fear is part of also creating a story that helps us overcome. And the story for me is always that we are the ones with the power. People have power. And when we recognize that, you know, governments, if they're not on our side, get very scared. But the truth is that Greece, I'd like to maybe insert something there, is not the first government that says no to austerity. And I think you and I spoke about a country many years back of Iceland who also said no after the crisis, after the meltdown. They said, no, we're not imposing a bailout of the banks, which is part of the reason why Greece is facing this collapse in their economic system, is that the bailout of banks did not result in a boosting of the economy. So perhaps could we talk a little bit about that process? Because I'd like to have a context for us to engage in this idea that, you know, austerity is just the order of the day. You know, there's nothing that can be done in the case of Greece or in the case of Spain or in the case of Italy, Portugal. You know, you choose the country in that region, you know, they're all being asked to do the same, and that is to cut, you know, the social investment on education, health, and impose this austerity to cover this odious debt.
Yes, let's talk about some other countries in Europe and what's happened. And we'll come back to Greece, but you bring up an excellent example. And I was just over in Europe for 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks in December. And I was in England, and I was in Finland, and I talked with people also in Sweden and from people from Ireland when I was there. I'm recently familiar with what it is the progressives, you know, in Europe are thinking about and what sort of problems they're dealing with. And one of the things that was very noticeable was a comparison between Ireland and Iceland. And both those countries are small countries. Both those countries experienced huge banking collapses. Their banks had gotten involved in the sort of financial shenanigans that Wall Street was leading, you know, financial banks and institutions all over the world into. So you had very similar collapses of private banks in Ireland and in Iceland, and the reactions of the two governments were entirely different. In one case, the Irish government said, we are going to basically force the people of Ireland to honor these debts of these private banks. We are going to bail out the banks. We're going to be collecting in the form of austerity from the Irish citizenry. In order to honor these debts that these private banks have run up. And in Iceland, the government began to do exactly the same. They were told by the IMF, you have to. There will be a disaster if you default on this debt. You must do this. You will become an international pariah. Your economy will never recover if you don't honor the debts. And so the government in Iceland started to do the same thing, and what happened there was that it got put on the ballot as a referendum. And the people in Iceland basically looked at the situation and said, wait a minute, if you want us to cover the private debt of these banks that are now bankrupt, that's going to cost every citizen in Iceland $30,000. And we didn't benefit from what they did. It's not our debt. Why should we do this? So the referendum did not pass, and Iceland did not bail out the banks. Now, Iceland also had the advantage that it is not a member of the Eurozone. Their currency devalued. They did not bail out the banks. And as a result, their exports rose to the European Union. They did not have to cancel all sorts of social programs that were canceled in Ireland. As a result, the domestic demand did not decrease. And if you now look at unemployment rates in Iceland compared to unemployment rates in Ireland, what you'll see is that the Iceland economy is doing much, much better than the Irish economy. Following the bailout the banks austerity program is a disaster for the populace. It's a disaster for the economy. when you compare what happened to Iceland and what happened to Ireland, it's as easy to see as it's very easy to see. The only supposed reason that all this austerity is being imposed, not just on Greece, but on all of the so-called pigs, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, Spain, the reason that we are given for the necessity of these austerity programs is you have to pay off debt. If you look at the debt to GDP ratios for every one of the pigs in 2007, and now you look at the debt to GDP ratios for every one of the pigs in 2014, 7 years of austerity, 7 years of bailing out banks and austerity for the populace has increased the debt to equity ratios in every single one of these countries. In other words, the incredible pain that's being imposed is even counterproductive in its own terms of trying to decrease the indebtedness of these governments. It just doesn't work. What it does accomplish is it completely transforms these economies and basically puts them at the service of corporations and banks, and it subjects their populations to increasing misery. It wipes out the middle class, and it makes for a completely compliant workforce. That's what it accomplishes, but it destroys countries and it destroys economies in its wake. And no place has that occurred to a greater degree than in Greece. So what we are seeing finally is the first successful political opposition to that policy, the first challenge to that policy that perhaps will be successful later this month, that's what we're in the process of witnessing.
Now, I think it's very important to point out what you mean by this whole idea of GDP and equity, because people sometimes think, well, what does that mean? Obviously, they have to do something. And so we're always being told that, you know, economy should be left to the economist. And, you know, the people have no business meddling into what kind of programs or what kind of policies should be put on. There was recently an interview on CBC Radio, and the person they were interviewing was one of the government. He says, this is a populist position, you know, it's totally ludicrous that people should be allowed to just put these positions. We can't just default on our loans. We must honor, da da da. And I have to admit that that kind of story told from a person who's been given so much authority and so much privilege in our society has a way of creating fear. But it's not all just fear, right? I mean, the IMF, the European Union are a pretty big hammer, you know, and they can, as you say, they can cause a lot of harm to Greece. Can we talk a little bit about the complexity then, you know, why, even though that threat is there, we must stand up and we must descend to these policies? Because to me, it just seems to be a spiral. The more we allow the fear to contaminate, the more we lose ground as workers, the more we become domesticated to whatever comes. You know, right now we have temporal workforces, we have workers in Canada that have, you know, different layers of status, right? Workers with rights, workers with documents, workers with unions, workers who are just vulnerable, you know? So can we talk a little bit?
Let me say one thing about economists and whether or not these decisions should be left to economists. The truth of the matter is that the decisions that are being made by bankers and businessmen. And the politicians who are enacting the policies are basically in their pay. And these are not policies that are being unanimously recommended by the economics profession. Now, there's a wing of the economics profession that is recommending these policies. And that's the wing that's recommending the policies that the businessmen and the bankers want. There are other economists who have been saying from the very get-go that austerity is only going to increase the debt-to-GDP ratio. That's the relevant measure because you want to look at how much debt a government has compared to the size of its economy. So the debt is in the numerator, and then the size of the economy is in the denominator. The technical question from an economics point of view is reducing government spending, is it going to decrease that debt-to-equity ratio? And good economists, good Keynesian economists, have been saying since the Great Depression, it won't work. The reason it won't work is when the government cuts spending, the economy sinks further into recession, and when there's a deeper recession, the government collects even less tax revenue. Therefore, its indebtedness goes up, not down. That's what good economists have been saying. For instance, and the idea that Syriza is just a bunch of populists who know nothing about economics, disabuse yourself of that. One of the people running on the Syriza slate is Yanis Varoufakis, who is a brilliant Greek economist. He is one of the three authors, along with Jamie Galbraith from the University of Texas and Stuart Holland. He was a member of parliament in the UK and an economic advisor in various labor governments. The three of them have come up with a very, very sensible proposal. They call it a modest proposal to save the European Union from this neoliberal tragedy. And so one of the three authors of the most sensible approach to what economic policy should be in Europe is going to be one of the prime negotiators and economic advisors and a member of parliament in the new Syriza government.
You know, I was thinking about my comment on economists, and just like everything in life, right, we can't just call everybody with a broad stroke. And you're right to point out that there are economists who are also responsible citizens and who also imagine and envision the world outside of capitalism, outside of the same thing that brought us to the crisis, right? Because when we think about the bailouts and the collapse of the banks, they're all symptoms of a bigger malady, you know, of a bigger illness, and that is we have been under capitalism system for over 300 years now, and those crises are constantly reoccurring. And so someone has to ask, well, maybe it's the way we have organized our economics. You know, to me, a system of capitalism is just one form of multitudes of ways that we can organize our economies and be able to create, you know, the resources, the material resources that we all need to develop, you know, our education, our health, and all the things that we depend on to have a society that is truly participant, right? And by that, I mean everybody having access. And so I wonder if we can talk then about the implication of Greece setting this example, because it is almost certain, as you point out, that the Syriza will win the elections. Whether they'll get a majority or a minority will determine the impact, you know, that this will have on the populace, whether they will be able to reverse some of those policies, whether they will be able to at least slow down, you know, the process.
Greece is going to be the crucible in which we're going to see how some things play out in the near future. And there's a lot at stake because the persistence of the counterproductive neoliberal policies, counterproductive from the perspective of 95% of Europeans, only productive from the perspective of large corporations and banks in Europe. The persistence of those policies is now going to be challenged in Greece. And there's a lot at stake because if Syriza successfully challenges and demonstrates that, like Iceland, rather than Ireland, there's a better way. If you are willing to reject austerity, and if you're willing to say there are some debts that simply cannot be honored, and certainly not honored by people who benefited not one iota from creating them in the first place, people should understand that in Greece already, they have suffered an economic crisis that is worse than the Great Depression was in the United States and Canada. They have lost 30% of GDP. The poverty rate has skyrocketed in Greece. You have a true humanitarian crisis on the order of things that we remember as being sort of part of the Great Depression experience of our parents and grandparents. They have already lived through that in Greece. That is the situation they find. There's something close to that in Spain. There's something close to that in Portugal. Italy is headed in that direction. So if the Syriza government challenges the powers that be in Europe and says, no, we won't. And if they are successful, the powers that be understand that this could have a tremendous domino effect in all of the other pigs. It would have an immediate effect in Spain. There's an election about a year from now that the newer left party in Spain, it's newer than Syriza is in Greece, it's called Podemos. And they made spectacular increases in the last election because they did exactly what Syriza did. They said very firmly and convincingly, we won't go along with this stuff. All the other political parties that have been elected have gone along with this stuff. It isn't working and we won't. So the powers that be want Syriza not to win. They are doing everything they can to scare the Greek people that they will be punished terribly if they elect a Syriza government. And if Syriza is elected anyway, it is very, very sure that the European Union will do everything they can to make sure that the economy of Greece suffers terribly. That's what's at stake here.
Every struggle we've ever faced as workers has always come to that. You know, there's always something to be paid, right? When you stand up, when you dissent, when you imagine something outside of the status quo, outside of how business is done, it's always a struggle, you know, and we see it everywhere. And for me, I was in Italy and I saw the demonstrations, massive demonstrations, you know, and so the people are ready, you know, they're tired of bleeding. And I think that we're going to see some amazing changes. Now we're coming to the end of our interview, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how then do we as workers in the world connect to this struggle, because it's not just the people in Greece, it's not just the people, you know, in Spain who are on the streets and who have seen massive loss of their economy. They literally have lost half of their economy, as you point out. The GDP just means the size of your economy compared to the debt that you're incurring, right, from all these so-called infusions of money into the economy, which really don't go to the economy. They go back to the banks. So it's like this catch-22 that we're in. The more we bail out the banks, the more debt we get, and the less economy we have, because people don't have money to work and they have no jobs.
But what the rest of us need to notice is that what's being done to Greece to a much greater extent, the same thing is being done to all of our economies. In the United States, we are talking about, no, we have to cut back on Social Security. We have to cut back on public education. And in Canada, you know that what your government has been saying is, well, it's, you know, we have to cut back on many of the social programs, you know, that Canada has been known for, that these can no longer be afforded. These things are not effective. This is not. So we're all being told that we should be going along with this neoliberal policy. The ultimate result of that is most visible in Greece. I think the lesson that the rest of us need to learn is, why should we wait until we get to be as desperate as they are in Greece? Why should we put up with more and more misery before we just come to our senses and say, absolutely no, this is not improving our lives. You are destroying the middle class, and there is another way. The other way is perfectly straightforward. The other way is, you increase spending when there's unemployment. You increase spending on social programs that benefit people rather than the military. You don't turn your economy into a raw material extracting, earth-destroying machine that benefits only the extractive industries and destroys, not only the environment in Canada, but virtually the environment of the entire world when you export the tar sands. So This is the direction in which the Canadian and the U.S. economy have been going. Greece is the example of where that leads to, and we should not only support the Greek people who are finally saying no. Well, they're not the first to say no. You know that as well. Cubans said no in 1959, and the Venezuelans said no in the 1990s, and three elections in a row in Uruguay they've said no. So there are other places in the world, but in the advanced economy, Greece is the first place that we will have a government. Syriza is not running on a socialist program. They are running on basic common sense economics that prioritizes people and investment and jobs over bank profits. That's what they're running on, and they have the majority support of the Greek people at this point. So we need to support them in every way we can, and this is difficult. This is one of the things I discovered in talking to left parties in Finland, to left parties in Sweden, and to the Green Party in the UK and Ireland. For instance, the left party in Finland is actually part of the Finnish coalition government. And the same is true for the left party in Sweden. Well, the Swedish government and the Finnish government are voting with the Germans to lower the hammer on the Greeks and the Spaniards and the Italians. So, I mean, they have this situation where they have to wake up and say, wait a minute, whose side are we on here? We not only have to fight for sensible, you know, pro-people economic policies in our own countries, we can't go along and be part of governments, our own governments, that when they go to the European Union are voting for the hardline repression against our comrades in Greece and in Spain. So we all have to do that, and I think we all have to basically wake up and say, look, that's where it leads if you don't stand up. Stand up sooner, not later.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's been such a privilege. My guest is Dr. Robin Hanel. He's a professor at the Portland State University and the author of many books. My very favorite is By the People, For the People, A Case for Participatory Economics. Thank you so much for being with us.
It was great to be on with you.
Take care.
Take care.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.